So, regarding the message of Buddhism, I think it's fair to say that that message today, as well as in the preceding centuries, has contained in great, great measure the moral imperative to compassion. In other words, a huge component in Buddhist teaching, in quotes, teaching, is the encouragement to develop compassion, to cultivate compassion toward all sentient beings, as the trope goes. Now, this component of Buddhism consists of two elements. One is simply the advisement, the preaching, the prescription of compassion. You are continually told by Buddhist celebrities such as the Dalai Lama, practice compassion. We must have compassion. We must have compassion with each other. We must cultivate compassion in order to have a better world. Ad infinitum. Secondarily, there are presumably some practices that would lead to someone acquiring more compassion. So, given that you have the capacity to be compassionate, like you might have the capacity to for math, or the capacity to sing, or the capacity to skateboard, well, given the right practices, you could enhance that capacity and you could become better at those activities. Likewise, it's presumed that if you have some compassion, you can become more compassionate. And the message of Buddhism is that everyone in the world, Buddhists and non-Buddhists, all need to become more compassionate without limit to the point of infinite compassion. And in fact, the Buddha and other numinous figures in the legacy and tradition of Buddhism are represented as beings of infinite compassion, bodhisattvas of infinite compassion, and so forth. So there is the preachment of compassion, just as love your neighbor and forgive your enemy are preached in Christianity. Likewise, compassion for all sentient beings is preached in Buddhism. And then there are various practices, for instance, perhaps the Eightfold Noble Path, right action, right livelihood, right thought. These are moral and ethical practices or moral and ethical guidelines for how to live that would lead to increasing one's compassion. So this element, this component of Buddhist teaching is enormous, and I'm sure anyone who has even had a mere superficial encounter with Buddhism would agree that what I'm presenting here is not a straw man argument, but it is an accurate representation of the case. Now, what I'd like to do in this talk, we'll see how it gets along, because this is totally impromptu, is set up a hypothetical situation, kind of in the game-playing mode. I'm going to assume going in that most of you listening to me, all of you listening to me, will have reached the same conclusion regarding the message of compassion coming from Buddhism. You've probably heard it. And if you've investigated Buddhism, you've probably heard it countless times. And so it's quite predictable. It's quite routine. When the occasion arises for a Buddhist scholar or a master to expound on the theme of compassion, well, you're going to hear the same thing coming from all of them and the same thing over and over and over again. What I'd like to do In this little talk, as far as I can do it in a solo style, is to present you with a different scenario. That would be the scenario in which an ordinary person sits in front of a dog Zen master and presents a question to the dog Zen master along these lines. Well, I have heard that the message of Buddhism, including enlightenment, also places great emphasis on compassion. And I would like to know the advice of a Buddhist master on how to cultivate and practice compassion. So picture a sincere individual, man or woman, sitting before a dog Zen master and posing that question. And now what I'll play out in this little riff is the manner in which the dog Zen master would respond. And as that response develops, you can compare it in your mind to what you have typically heard as exposition for compassion coming from traditional Buddhist teachers. So let's give it a try. To keep it simple so that it can flow well, I'll pretend that I'm the dog Zen master. You can call me Lama Lovemut. And I will speak to you directly. I will pretend that you listening to this recording are the serious and sincere individual who has come before me with this question. O Master, please tell me, teach me, inform me, advise me how to cultivate and practice compassion. And so Lama Lovemut responds, well, in the first place, do you have anything to work with? Do you currently have any compassion? Do you, as you are living right now at this moment, sitting before me, do you feel compassion for anyone or anything in any way? Or do you feel absolutely no compassion at all? Now, I'm willing to assume, I feel safe in assuming, that the questioner, in any case, will say, yes, well, I have some compassion, but I don't always operate and work in a compassionate way. Sometimes I can't access my compassion. Sometimes it's just not there at all. I can't even refer it. I can't even detect it in certain situations. So what I'm really asking is, how could the compassion that I have become more accessible, and how can I apply it more skillfully? Because the questioner, I'm being the questioner now, the questioner says, I'm familiar with the fundamentals of Buddhism, and I know that karuna, compassion, and upaya, skillful means, are paired. So it's one thing to have the quality of compassion, karuna, and which is not love or friendship or desire, and it is something else to have upaya, or the actual skillful means in order to express and practice compassion. So please advise me on these matters. And Lama Lovemut says, well, it's a good thing that you know that you have some compassion. You can consider that like currency in your pocket. You might have some change in your pocket, 35 cents, or you might have $35, or you might have $3,500 in your pocket. It's all currency. You begin to negotiate with a certain amount of currency. Likewise, you begin to cultivate and develop compassion based on having a certain amount of compassion. So let's assume that that is a given. Question is, where do you go from there? Do you want to have more? Yes. Do you want to be able to be more skillful and generous with the compassion that you feel? You answer yes. Answer yes to those two questions. So Lama Lovemut comes back and says, so, you really are saying that you want to increase the compassion that you feel already, and you want to become more skillful in expressing it, correct? And the questioner says, correct, the supplicant, okay? The supplicant says, correct. And Lama Lovemat says, well, why would you want to do that? Is it a choice? Are you really making a choice that you want to be more compassionate? Or are you simply responding out of some sense of obligation or guilt? Why aren't you satisfied, or are you not satisfied, with the compassion that you already have in the manner in which you express it? Why do you feel the genuine need to have more and express it better? Is it really a choice that you're making? Or is it something you're doing out of a sense, as I say, of guilt or obligation, or perhaps out of the narcissistic concern, the narcissistic presumption that you would become in that way a better person and therefore you would feel better about yourself? So do you seek to cultivate compassion so you feel better about yourself? Is it an egotistical and narcissistic concern? And have you ever considered just saying no? Just saying, I feel compassion. I express it in the way that I do, selectively perhaps. I don't express it to every single living creature in the world. And I'm quite content with how I do so. And I feel no need whatsoever to have more compassion. As a matter of fact, there's another option, another possibility. Lama Lovemat raises this possibility because the supplicant probably would be incapable of holding such an outrageous notion. But Lama Lovemat says, well, what if you have too much compassion? What if that's really your problem, and that really is an existential problem with clear and present dangers? You have too much compassion, and you don't even know how to handle the compassion that you have. What if that's the case? If that's the case, well, you're not doing yourself any favors by coming to me and asking me to teach you how to cultivate compassion. You would do much better asking me how to teach you to handle the compassion that you already have, which may be in excess of what you know how to handle. You'd be much better off asking me what is the appropriate way, what are the appropriate channels for my compassion? What are the correct channels of expression for the compassion that I already have, given the human condition in Kali Yuga and given the current state of the world? Now, that's getting somewhere. The supplicant is raising questions that are not ordinarily raised. And Lama Lovemat is staging the conversation and coaching the supplicant in such a way that the discussion about compassion becomes a real discussion. This is a real and honest discussion about compassion. This is how such a discussion could develop, but only in Dogsen could such a discussion be allowed or encouraged or invited or even imagined. Now, there are several directions in which the conversation could go from this point, obviously. For instance, it could go in the direction of a discussion of psychopathy. Are there people who have no compassion, who feel no empathy for others? That would bring up the topic of compassion compared to empathy. How much of a factor of selfishness is actually involved in compassion? necessary and justifiable selfishness. How does one act toward those who have no compassion? So the conversation could develop in a number of ways, but for right now, at this point, let's just say that Lama Lovemat proposes to lay down a provisional framework for the discussion to continue, for any discussion of compassion to take place. Let's say that a provisional semantic framework must be laid down. The participants in the conversation would then agree upon the terms in use, the terms to be argued and discussed. And upon agreement of those terms, although it's only provisional, it's nothing absolute, the conversation can develop on a sound and even basis because the participants agree on the terms. So in that case, Lama Lovemat could present a kind of elementary teaching on the foundations of compassion. And how would that sound? Well, it would sound something like this. Regardless of everything that might be said about compassion and about the necessity for compassion, one thing is certain. Compassion belongs to the realm of what lives, what is alive. You feel compassion due to the very great fact that you are alive, and you feel it toward that which is alive. Now, you may be overwhelmed and deeply moved by the beauty of a waterfall, or of the Himalayas, or of a glacier calving, but you do not feel compassion for events in the apparently non-sentient world. You feel compassion in relation to living creatures, sentient beings, to use the Buddhist trope. You could feel compassion for a black widow spider, and I have done that. You can feel compassion for a horse, for an elephant, for a parakeet, for a vulture, and I have done that. And I felt a compassion of the vultures for myself. So compassion is basically and fundamentally and essentially a two-way current that flows between living creatures. And that loop of compassion also includes a secondary feedback loop wherein you feel compassion for yourself. So compassion for oneself and compassion for other sentient beings who are anthropines or human animals, and then compassion for all sentient beings and all that lives. That is the realm of compassion, and it is entirely permeated by the quality of life, of animation, of symbiosis. You could say, speaking in terms of Gayan physics and Gayan Tantra, that compassion is a vibratory quality in the tensegrity of the symbiotic web of life. And wherever there is compassion among living creatures, the web of life holds a certain tension, and that tension is healthy. And it supports the entirety of the field of life. Now, this is a foundational description of compassion to be set out and proposed at the beginning of any discussion about the issue. Fair enough? Now, once again, at this point, it's easy to see how the conversation, first of all, is engaging. I mean, this is something rather novel. This is a conversation that produces intriguing questions and challenges. You're not just seeing a situation with a supplicant sitting at the feet of a master, and the master is preaching timeless cliches about the necessity for compassion that have been repeated hundreds and thousands and millions of times, and the supplicant is just sitting there in a blind state of spoon-feeding, receiving this moral advice, these moral imperatives, and considering how to be obedient to what the master dictates. Now, this is a real conversation. It's got some teeth to it. It's got some tread. But the Dharma has lost its tread long ago. Now, the conversation at this point could go in a really steep direction, which raises some radical and controversial issues. For instance, in basing the concept of compassion, in situating it in the symbiotic web of life, raises the question, well, does a compassionate person or would a compassionate person ever harm life? Would they ever harm another living creature, be it a human animal or non-human, or would they ever kill? Would someone who is compassionate ever kill another human animal? It raises this question. The conversation can go in that direction. And one thing to be sure, even though I'm not going to take it in that direction right now, one thing to be sure of is that the treatment of compassion in Dog Zen does not by any means exclude killing or murder. Not by any means. So there is not, you do not find in Dog Zen a categorical rule that someone who has compassion would not harm or kill any living creature. That is definitely not the case. So in that direction, the conversation goes into what is called the zone of transgression, and that involves another way of treating the issues that arise. Rather than go in that direction, let's just proceed with the fundamental setup of this conversation. Remember that the supplicant who comes to the master asking for advice on how to cultivate compassion admits to already having some compassion. I return to that point. And from that point, let's see how Lama Lovemut treats the subject. Well, suppose that you, the supplicant, consider your compassion as currency, like money. Two factors come into play with money: how you carry it and how you spend it, or how you dispense it. For instance, let's suppose that you, the supplicant, has $500 in the form of $500 bills. Now, how do you carry this money? Do you carry it in your fist as you walk around? Do you carry it in a wallet? Do you carry it in a roll in your pocket like a mafioso, wise guy? Do you carry it in your underwear, in your socks? Do you carry it in a security belt around your waist? Or do you perhaps display it on your shirt using 5 clothespins to pin the 5 $100 bills in full display on your shirt? Or do you just secrete those 5 bills under the cuff of your shirt just so the edge can be observed by an observant, someone who catches that detail? There are many ways that you can carry or hold the currency of compassion. Then comes the question of how do you spend it? What do you spend it on? Who do you give it to, or what do you buy with it? For instance, how about this fundamental question? if Lama Lovemut proposes the analog of currency for compassion, and that implies that you can buy things with that currency. So do you use your compassion to purchase things, as you might with those $500, or do you simply give away the $500? Now, as far as Lama Lovemut knows, that simple, playful analogy, user-friendly analogy, is a complete novelty in the discussion of compassion. But not quite, because there is an idea that comes up in Buddhism which is a huge pain in the ass, and that is the idea of merit. Merit. It's associated with the Sanskrit word dana, meaning generosity. And so there's a lot of talk in the original scriptures of Mahayana Buddhism, for instance, about the bodhisattva acquiring merit. And somehow merit is what you buy with compassion. So there is this notion that you are trading on compassion as currency in Buddhism. It is a murky, ambiguous, and contaminated notion, a contaminated notion of generosity that pervades Buddhist teaching, particularly the deontology of Buddhism, that is to say, the moralistic preaching about what is right and what is wrong to do and how to behave in relation to others. This problem of merit is a terrible impediment to Buddhism itself. It has crippled the message of Buddhism, and it is to this day an unresolved issue of Buddhism. So, slight digression there, but Lama Lovemut deemed it worth mentioning, you see, because it fits the analogy. You've got $500 on you. That's the currency of compassion that you hold. You don't hold $50 or $5 million. You hold $500. So are you going to give it away all, asking nothing in return? Are you going to give some of it away and spend some? Or are you going to spend some with the intention of getting something in return for all $500? There is a huge discussion that could go on for days. And in that discussion, each participant, each supplicant, could provide anecdotes and examples of spending compassion in those two ways, dispensing compassion, either for free, out of pure generosity, or to get something in return. And all of that discussion and all the aspects of it that would arise, all the moral and ethical and personal and emotional considerations that would arise, would be extremely instructive and helpful regarding the problem of compassion. So in Dog Zen, this is the initial treatment. This is the basis of the treatment. Compassion is a problem. It is not simply a universally acknowledged good that needs to be acquired and cultivated. It's problematic, to use a term from social justice warriors. And significantly, it is problematic in the context of social justice and in the context of the terrific social deception and confusion of our time, you see? Which point brings Lama Lovemut to the concluding trajectory of this little conversation. There are many places it could go, but I'm going to take it in this way. I'm going to say that as an accomplished Dog Zen Lama, I enjoy telling you about my experience first person. I don't talk to you in the abstract or in the third person, or in a distancing façon de parler, as Buddhist masters do. I tell you directly about my existential reality, my first-person experience. And then you make of it what you will. So in my first-person experience, I find that I have too much compassion. And my problem in life has been misspending my compassion, using it unskillfully. I don't need to cultivate or acquire more compassion, but I do need to be more skillful in using the compassion that I have. But what are the criteria for skillfulness with compassion? What are the standards? Well, I find when I look at the world around me, the world that I live in, Lama Lovemut, in the year 2020, in the closing two centuries of Kali Yuga, I find that the human condition is such that I am living in a world without compassion. I see very little compassion in the world around me, except on a day-to-day basis in what might be called small and routine matters in interactions with people around me. I might see some compassion. But I do not see compassion operating in the world at large. I do not see it operating in any sphere of activity of the world order, such as politics, entertainment, education, the media. There's no compassion there anywhere. I see no one in the media, for instance, exhibiting compassion. So my direct experience is that I'm someone who already has more compassion than I can handle skillfully. And not only that, but I have to deploy my compassion in a world without compassion. This is where the conversation about compassion needs to be grounded and founded. And it needs to be developed from here if you're going to talk about compassion with me, because that's all I know. And that's not theoretical. That is existential. Another outstanding factor in my experience, additional to finding myself in a world that operates without compassion, almost entirely without compassion, another outstanding factor of my world is that I do see other people who have the same problem as I do. That is to say, they have too much compassion, or they simply cannot skillfully, correctly handle the compassion that they have, whatever its quantity may be. And I detect as a striking fact of observation of the facts of life, I detect that those other human animals who share my problem of having too much compassion and not knowing what to do with it are white. They have a racial profile. They are predominantly of the white races, not exclusively, but preponderantly so. So when I look at the compassion in myself, when I look at the lack of compassion in the world, and when I look at the problem of compassion for those who do have it, my attention goes to a racial profile. What do you think about that? Well, it so happens in Maitreya Challenge that one of the points of argument coming from the Maitreya goes directly to racial consciousness and racial difference. It is certainly a fact, if the word ever gets out regarding Maitreya Challenge, it is a fact that the Maitreya will be perceived as a racist. The Maitreya is a racist. This is a huge shock. It ought to be a huge shock. And there is a certain truth in it. although it is certainly more correct to say that the Maitreya is a racial realist. And part of what the Maitreya has to teach the world, if you want to consider the Maitreya as the world teacher, that's a trope from Theosophy. Well, if you want to play along with that trope, then one of the first things that the Maitreya teaches is racial realism. Because racial realism is the view of the clear and present dangers of racial hatred that need to be confronted by compassionate people. As far as non-compassionate people is concerned, well, you may as well write them off, because people who have little or no compassion, and there are many in the world today, are going to be incapable of doing anything whatsoever about the massive problem of racial hatred in the world. It's only people with compassion that can face that problem and move the social order toward a solution or resolution of that problem. And so that issue is one of the leading arguments in the Maitreya challenge. So to conclude this little riff, getting back to Lama Lovemut, I'll turn the mic over to him so that he can sketch out how the racial factor is indispensable and entirely inseparable from the concept of compassion. The correct view of the human races is inseparable from a correct practice of compassion. How so? Well, think of compassion as a ripple. Here you have a still pond. You're sitting on the bank of the pond, enjoying the beauty of the trees around it, looking at the tranquil and mirror-like surface of the pond. And you pick up a small pebble and you throw it into the pond, and it creates a series of ripples. Compassion is a force that produces a series of ripples through the symbiotic web of life. But it does so in a particular manner, which can be, in some respects, quite mysterious. In any case, it does so in a manner that has not yet been fully and adequately explained, and Buddhism has come nowhere near to even formulating what I'm going to say now. When you throw a pebble into the tranquil or placid and impassive pond, and it makes ripples on the surface of the pond, the ripples form uniformly in all directions. Small ripples, and then they expand and they go outward and they become larger and larger until they dissolve. But the ripple of compassion does not work in that way, because ultimately compassion is a choice. You feel compassion, perhaps whether you want to or not, but the way that you act on that compassion is a choice. You do not have to act on the compassion you feel in every situation. In fact, becoming skillful with compassion requires exactly the discernment and the discrimination of choosing those situations when you express it, when you apply it, and choosing those individuals. So you would imagine that the ripple of compassion does not go out by forming uniform rings, but it forms very erratic rings. And only at certain points do those rings touch the surface of the pool. In other areas, the rings do not reach. In other words, the rings do not reach the surface of the pool uniformly. How can I translate this analogy? There you are, a human animal, you're alive, and you have around you two categories of living creatures. You have other anthropines, other human animals, and you have non-human animals. So let's say you live in a house with parents, two siblings, and three animals. The ripple of your compassion goes out to those living beings, human and non-human, but it does not go out uniformly. It is not one consistent ripple that just grows and expands to encompass everything within its reach. It is a selective ripple. So you may feel compassion toward one parent and not another. You may feel compassion toward all three siblings or none at all, or just one. You may feel compassion toward the animals in the house and not the other human beings. Compassion is selective. It has to be selective in order to function optimally. There is no such thing as universal compassion, unqualified and unconditionally offered to all sentient beings. That is a total fantasy. That is the illusion of compassion. And remember that Kali is the destroyer of all illusions, especially and foremost, the illusion of compassion. Do not indulge in the illusion of compassion. If you really care about being a compassionate person and you think it matters and you can make a difference, then you need to buckle down really hard and learn about discernment and discrimination in the application of your compassion. Who are you going to give that currency to for free? Why and in what situation? Who are you going to trade on with that currency? Why, how, and in what situation? And all of that needs to be understood in concrete terms, in existential terms. Then you are mastering compassion. And what is the point of having compassion if you can't master it and apply it in a competent and skillful manner? So finally, Lama Lovemut offers this further observation. You live, you the supplicant who came to me with a question about how to cultivate compassion, you live in a web of relationships with other sentient beings. Now, I myself find it easy to express my compassion toward non-human animals. And my compassion toward non-human animals is almost entirely unqualified. And I choose to express my compassion to all non-human animals as much as I can. And the more that I express it, the greater it is, and the more I enjoy it. When it comes to the expression of my compassion toward people around me, I am much more selective, much more. And it is a very great fact that I withhold my compassion from many people, period. I would not consider it worthwhile to myself or them to express compassion toward them. When I wake up every day, I meditate on my compassion simply by living in that feeling of empathy. I have that feeling of empathy. It's part of the fabric of my life. And as I live in it, I scan the world around me. I look at the human animals who are close in by, the few people who are close friends and allies, very few in my physical presence. And I decide, I choose to express compassion for them or not. And in some cases I do, in some cases I don't show them any compassion at all for certain matters in certain situations. Then I look out further, the people in the neighborhood, the people in the country, the people in the land where I currently inhabit, to the people I see when I'm traveling from one land to another. And I look out to the far horizon where I see the human races. I see the black races, the Asian, the red, the white races. I see the races, the major racial groups, of which the white races are the minority, globally speaking. And I see the ethnic variations of those races. And in each observation of those bands of the spectrum of races, I deliberately select where my compassion will go. And I do that every day, and I renew the selection every day. And I can tell you right out front that my compassion goes to a large extent to the white races. The white races who are currently the subject of a program, an evil and deceptive program, that seeks to bring down universal hatred upon white people. So I feel compassion for what the white races are facing, but I do not feel compassion for the manner in which most people of the white races are handling what's coming to them. And what's coming to them is a clear and present danger of their extinction. And so as far as my compassion goes, I cannot separate the responsibility I have to maintain it and express it from what I see happening to the white races. And I would conclude by risking an almost universalist statement by saying that the fate of the white races determines the fate of compassion itself for the entire human species. And that is so, whether you like it or not, for everyone who lives in this world today, with or without compassion.